Hello and welcome to Heart Yoga Radio. We're having a bit of a walk through the Welsh countryside today, which is where we live now. So we'll be doing this a lot more often, which is nice for us. Yesterday in the kitchen, we were having a conversation about the current political climate and the likelihood of there perhaps being a general election a bit sooner than we think. So I just want to kick off this podcast by asking Pete his opinion, who would be the best person to vote for the good of all the people of this country, not just the 1%, but for everyone, and perhaps not just this country, but something that would have a very positive global ripple effect.
Yeah, Jeremy Corbyn, no doubt about it. Corbyn amongst our politicians, politicians in the Western so-called democracies, he recognises that business as usual is not an option.
What is business as usual?
Business as usual is carrying on with the neoliberal fudge, which is a trickle-up system, which has resulted in a handful of people owning half the wealth on the planet, or at least as much wealth on the planet as the bottom 2 or 3 billion people. Gross inequalities of wealth and power, when we were promised that the so-called free market and this capitalism, free market capitalism, would guarantee prosperity for all. And that, recognising that, and that system is really unstable now. 2008, we saw the biggest global economic collapse since 1929.
And it does seem to appear that is gearing up to happen again.
Oh yeah, it's completely fucked. It's an untenable system. Secondly, of course, we've got the huge instability in the environment. Global warming, soil degradation, degradation of the oceans, the beginnings of scarcity of drinking water, and so on and so on, all in the context of a rising population and economic instability, and producing mass movements of people. And on top of that, a third system, the cultural system, which is a part of the system, the collection of systems that maintain human life on the planet, that too is incredibly unstable, fragmented, fractured. And you can see this everywhere. It's not just here, it's everywhere. Mr. Corbyn sees this, at least to some extent, and has a programme to push back against it. He'll have his work cut out, I'll have to say, if he gets in.
Yeah.
Because the establishment is already mounting a smear campaign against Corbyn in person and Labour in general.
And this is the thing that was really getting us going last night in our conversation, was just intense smear campaign.
Absolutely intense, and you can, against all the evidence. Nobody's saying the man's perfect, and nobody's saying that the Labour Party's perfect. It's not. The Labour Party is as fractured over Brexit as the rest of the political parties. I don't know, I suppose the Lib Dems say, oh, we are just unequivocally a Remain party. But, you know, this, we're talking about a mass party with 500,000 members. There's bound to be a lot of difference of opinion in there. But, of course, we've had the big one's been the anti-Semitism smear. And if you go back over these podcasts...
Still going on about...
We spoke about this a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
And it's a definite smear campaign, and it kind of reached a sort of a pinnacle. I think it was last night, with a Panorama broadcast purportedly giving the story of anti-Semitism in Labour. Somebody described it, one commentator described it as not a balanced report, but the case for the prosecution. You know, and it's many, many sins of omission. The number of prominent Jews who support Corbyn, and state the absolutely demonstrable truth that he's done more to support Jewish communities than anybody, but he happens to be a pro-Palestinian and not a fan of the right-wing Israeli government. Fair enough. But there's been definitely an absolute relentless attempt to vilify Corbyn.
And just the astonishing barefaced lies.
Yeah, and there are astonishing barefaced lies. But say, it's not to say there's never been any anti-Semitism in Labour. There has, it's everywhere. You know, but in general, we have a party at least formally committed to equality and anti-discriminatory on the basis of class, creed, religion, ethnicity and so forth, unequivocally. That is the linchpin of the thing. So anyway, it was a there's no doubt about it, whichever way you look at it, it was a hatchet job, and demonstrably so. Mm. And Corbyn's record in his parliamentary voting, he's a man on the side of history, you know. But consistent, more consistent than anybody. And as I say, a number of prominent Jews have come out to speak up for him as his character and his record. Amongst them, the great Noam Chomsky and Professor Finkelstein. These are pretty prominent.
What did they say?
That it's a concerted campaign to smear the bloke because they're absolutely shit scared that they'll have a sort of a mildly socialist government in the UK.
Why are they scared of that?
Because it'll push gas back against the establishment, against the 1% who control the wealth and therefore have enormous power on planet Earth to the detriment of everybody else. You know, the people in charge of the trickle-up system that they're trying to tell us is a trickle-down system. You know, neoliberal free market capitalism, in other words. And they're terrified.
I'm also terrified of the domino effect.
There will be a domino effect. I mean, if we had a general election at the end of the year, which is not impossible, nobody knows for sure. Not impossible, though. I don't know how the Tories can hang on. I mean, as Boris is almost certainly going to become Prime Minister. He's going to try and do a no deal and possibly even to prorogue Parliament, which would be a move constituting a constitutional crisis in the UK. So the shit's going to hit the fan, and they've only got a tiny. They haven't got a majority. It's a minority government. So that's unstable, you know. And the only way out really would be some kind of general election. So there's all that happening. And so there's a great likelihood. So they're really pushing out the forces to smear and vilify. And the gutter press and the BBC are really right there in there, the Daily Mail and so forth. But the BBC is terrible.
Yeah.
It's terrible. And any political question about anything, it could be about like some government initiative to bring up the popularity of darts in East Anglia or some kind of shit like that. And the interviewer would say, and what about anti-Semitism in Labour, you know? They're absolutely.
I mean, yeah. That's the tactic, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's just relentless repetition.
Yeah, well, Goebbels said this. He said, what you do is you just keep repeating it.
Yeah.
And, of course, he got this from Bernays, you know, Freud's nephew who wrote the book Propaganda in the 1920s, which, incidentally, more or less became the foundation of modern advertising technique.
You know.
And Goebbels loved it.
Yeah.
So you just keep repeating it.
Yeah.
Accuse other people of your own crimes. Accuse your enemies of your own crimes.
Yeah.
Trump's a master at this, you know. But, you know, Theresa May, question time, Prime Minister's questions, she'll do it. She does this thing. Anti-Semitism in his own party, you know. And the Tory party is, it's a party of fucking Enoch Powell, you know. It's institutionally racist, you know. They reckon that there's good figures and good reliable statistics on this that 0.06% of Labour members, of which there are 500,000, might have sort of ostensibly anti-Semitic views. 47% or 50% or 60%, I don't know, some huge figure of Tory members believe that Islam is undermining British society. Mm. You know, they get away with it. The BBC never asks them a question about it. Never. But they can't actually put the word Labour in a sentence without uttering some smear. You know. or saying that they're behind in the polls because they were behind in one poll.
Oh, when yeah, in the other
four
night,
polls,
yeah.
they're ahead, and if you average them,
like all this thing about the polls is just completely distorted.
It's bollocks, anyway.
It's lies.
Yeah. I mean, they defied the polls in the last general election, the one that Mrs. May called to try and give herself a bit of a mandate because she was one of these unelected Tory prime ministers, elected only by the party. You know, there's 160,000. Tory members, much more than the Labour Party, and they are currently voting between Jeremy Hunt and Boris Johnson, both scions of our wonderful public school system, you know, and both actually like damaged narcissists produced by a torture-based education system, given the skills to lord it over the plebs. In other words, this kind of like super competence and gift of the gab. Whilst, obviously, didn't really receive much by way of an education. I got a 10 times better education in my kind of scabby comprehensive up in Bushbury, you know. and there's 160,000 people going to decide the future of the country. So it was that kind of accusation that got Mrs. May to call a snap general election. And it kind of like wiped out the majority. What a miscalculation. She is a... You need to have a bit of luck to be a politician, I reckon. And she was born under a fucking... an ill-fated star, that one, when it comes to... Mm-hmm. All of the calculations, they were just went... They were just wrong, you know. They just went sideways. But yeah, that's a huge smear campaign. But also, you know, there's an internal part of that in Labour. It's the Labour defenders of neoliberalism. And the old Blairites, because Tony Blair's Labour Party had got, it was about like 0.5% socialism. Tony Blair got rid of Clause 4 out of the Labour Constitution.
What's Clause 4?
That was a commitment by Labour that was placed in at its foundation. Which said that the party was committed to the public ownership of the means of production. And in fact, you know, Labour did, whenever it got power early on, sort of, particularly after the Second World War, you know, nationalised things that should belong to the people, railways, power, electricity, water, gas, you know, and in line with the commitments in Clause 4. Tony Blair got rid of that. Tony Blair basically was a sort of a Thatcherite, a neoliberal, but with a kind of sort of like a softer face, with a human face, you know. So there were some concessions, there were some crumbs from the table for the working class. That's why the guy got three majorities, you know. Because he happened to be there at a time when the economy was powering along, you know. Obviously, it was all a bubble because 2008, then it went pop, you know. Mm. So. But Corbyn's. I mean, he gets accused of everything, even his pals. But I say he's got his internal opposition. He got elected, much to everybody's surprise, as Labour leader. The Blairites in the party had a vote and no confidence in him. He got elected by the membership with an increased majority. Fantastic. So, I mean, to the critics, so they say, well, the other thing is, he's a mild-mannered kind of a bloke. Even though I think he's not I think he's actually quite a good orator now. Now he's gone into his stride. People say he's useless because he's a bit pacifistic. You know, he doesn't like war. So they say he's like some kind of wanker because he doesn't like war.
So it does seem like the BBC is definitely descending to low depths. I know it used to have a good reputation for reporting in a balanced way. Maybe it never did. Maybe it just always appeared to. I'm not sure. I mean, you don't know, because like for a long time, you know, when I was say a teenager and we didn't have the marvels of the internet, we could only have a few news sources, couldn't we?
Yeah.
So maybe they've always been like this, and we just didn't know before.
Yeah.
What do you think? Do you think there's been a change, or why has it changed?
My view is that it's always been a propaganda organ of the establishment. It is, after all, granted a charter by the government. And it was the only outlet until pirate radio.
So they were controlling in the news 19, source
was that,
then?
Was that the early 1960s? And then, you know, independent television with, funded by advertising. This is relatively new, you know, the first, I don't know when the BBC started, but it had decades of being the only source, that and the press, which has uniformly been owned by billionaires, and still is, in the US and in Europe and in the UK. The press is owned by a very, very small collection of extremely rich people. And they are propaganda organs to maintain the status quo and to fool the people, as you call them, the 99%, from getting wise to what's going on and sharpening their pitchforks, which is what they would do if they knew what's going on. So I keep saying, if you control information, you control everything.
Yeah.
And we should regard money as a type of information. And the immiseration of a great proportion of the world's population is down to the fact that a very few people hold all the wealth and power and continue to do so by controlling the information. So as far as I can see, the BBC has always been an organ of the state, or the status quo, which is not necessarily the state, but the status quo. And they definitely don't want Corbyn in. Most of the top producers and interviewers and journalists, so-called, in the BBC are a product of this public school system. A good half of them.
Right.
I don't know what it is. A very small percentage of the population of the country actually get that education. Under 10%, might 7% or something like that. Probably even less than that. At the top of my head, I don't know, but it's tiny.
Yeah.
And yet, they disproportionately, the graduates of that education system disproportionately occupy prominent positions in corporations, civil service, government, banks, media, including the BBC. And it's a system of privilege, you know. So, and the BBC is well ensconced in all that. That's my thought, having looked at the history and so forth.
But then, so do you feel that Jeremy Corbyn will be a good Prime Minister? Because they're repeating over and over again just how bad he's going to be and how weak he is and all these other things over and over again.
He's a consummate politician, but he's up against an absolute shitstorm of vilification, and from inside his own party. Well, naturally, you know, a mass movement party like that is going to be, no matter what you do, it's going to be some kind of broad church. But there is a rump of MPs and officials and councillors and so forth within Labour who are committed to neoliberalism as the only way of organising an economy. And that's what's at the bottom of it. It gets dressed up in anti-Semitism, or is, because he's a mild-mannered, pacifistic kind of a bloke, doesn't like war, but he somehow ain't got that kind of Churchill aggression that in the popular imagination is what's required to lead the country. But I say, somebody who can preside over the growth of a socialist party into the biggest mass movement grassroots party in Europe, it deserves some credit for that. It's not nothing. That is not nothing. And as I say, you know, the only way the world is going to get out of its current impasse and avoid total disaster because of the unsustainability of the life support systems, the enmeshed life support systems, is if the politicians who preside over this rescue attempt have got the support of a huge active grassroots. It's necessary. It has to be a grassroots and the levers of state power kind of operation. And the powers that be, if you look in, if you research this, there's all kinds of dirty tricks going on behind the scenes. Huge amounts of money being poured into keeping business as usual going. And huge effort.
And one of the things they were doing recently was trying to imply that Jeremy Corbyn was too physically unfit.
I know.
I mean, if you look at him next to nearly everybody in Parliament who were, you know, like portly, to be kind.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a very fit man, isn't he? Physically fit.
Yeah. I mean, he's 70. 70's the new 40, isn't it? But he is fit, he runs, he cycles, he don't smoke or drink, as far as we know. And I haven't heard that he kind of been snorting the white powder up his nose, which is more than the kind of the Tory candidates for leadership and leadership of this country can claim. They've had to come out, you know. Michael Gove came out, didn't he? Fucking hypocrite. Oh yeah, I snorted some cocaine at university. You know.
He's a lot fitter than most of them.
He's fit. He's fit. He's mentally fit. He's got a different style, and people don't get it. Or even if they do get it, they can seize upon it to mount a vilification.
And it is like desperately pathetic, the kind of things that they're trying to use against him.
I mean, this shows how scared they are of him.
Yeah.
That they have to say, oh, he's not fit, he's not a well man. He's had a stroke. You know.
Yeah.
So all over YouTube, you've got pictures of him climbing up a rock wall, you know, and doing 200 miles an hour on his bike, you know. And they will try anything. They're terrified because it could be the beginning of a pushback.
Yeah.
And as I said,
I
think it'll lean, if we have a general election soon and Corbyn gets in, it'll provide a real boost to the Justice Democrats, but Bernie Sanders in particular will be, it will benefit from it. And I think it might begin in the beginning of a pushback in Europe as well, you know. The trouble is with all this stuff, the absolute dissatisfaction and alienation, which comes with being powerless, can make people jump equally easily to the right as to the left. And you know, because you get a lot of resentment bottled up and some kind of nasty dark emotions when people are powerless. I mean, we've had 10 years, 11 years of austerity, and there's a lot of frustration has bottled up because you've got a whole generation of people. They can't get anywhere to live in the richest countries in the world.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and loads and loads of similar problems. Student debt. In fact, like a system of debt peonage. To get the necessities of life, an education and somewhere to live, you have to be in debt for the whole of your working life. System set up like that. It's always been like that. First time I went to college, they just give me the money to go, paid the fees.
I had a grant for the first few years I was in college as well.
Yeah, but no more. You know, so there's a lot of frustration, but there are people who know how to mobilise that frustration into a very dark direction. And it generally comes down to blaming immigrants. And, well, why are there waves of people trying to get into Britain and come across the border in the US, into Texas and the southern states? Well, because millions of people got displaced by wars started and propagated, usually over resources like oil, by the US and by their fucking lapdog, the British. You know, the immigration crisis, so-called, is a result of the psychopathic capitalism of the United States and the West. You know, so. But of course, what do? They don't own that. They just they've then got some people to blame for the frustration that the mass of people are feeling, which really arises out of their powerlessness, because power sits in the hands of a few people, a handful of people. So, Corbyn's is a bit of a chance for us to push back. He's not like a rampant hard left. They call him the hard left. He's not. You know, but he has got some kind of proper socialist programmes, and with a grassroots support, he will be able to push back against the resistance that he'll get from the establishment, the civil service, the judiciary, the military, and all the dirty tricks that intelligence and so forth are playing against him.
So one of the policies that he wants to implement is the Green New Deal.
Yeah.
Can you tell us about that?
Yeah. The idea is to put the economy on an emergency footing to tackle the environmental degradation and the instability of the biosphere. And the same idea has been suggested in the US by Justice Democrats, by Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Bernie Sanders is behind it. And you get some kind of pale imitations of it, some attempts to capture the thunder of that by the right, saying, oh, we're going to look after the environment. But Corbyn is proposing a Green New Deal, and there's guys in Labour think tanks, backroom guys, very, very able people, working up the policy and doing the sums and figuring out the organisational stuff that will be required. Now, it's called the New Deal because it takes its example from the New Deal, which Franklin Delaney Roosevelt, FDR, instituted in the US in the 30s after the catastrophic crash of 1929, which put a very large proportion of the population out of work. And there weren't so much welfare in those days, you know. It was a real cataclysm. And the free market economists, the classical economists, thought that that labour would price itself back in, because there was a lot of unemployed people in competition for jobs. They'd work for very low wages, and that the economy would get going again. All that was happening was a price correction in labour. It was like a crash in the price of the labour market. Because that style of economics takes the individual as the unit, whether a worker or a capitalist, and exchange, like when you sell something, as being the primary atom of economic life. In contrast to Marxists, who see the motor of the economy as being more like the conflict of economic classes between each other. So FDR, and he had to work with the trade unions at the time, because American unions were quite strong, and leftists in America, they more or less said, we'll let you rescue capitalism if we do it this way. And what they did was they set up loads and loads of infrastructure programs. They built dams, the Grand Coulee Dam is the famous one, and roads and so forth. They even got artists together painting murals in artist collectives. And the government did it with basically print money, pump prime the economy, like a Keynesian manoeuvre, but backed by the labour unions. And the American economy, it came back. The market wasn't going to correct itself. And the reason's quite simple. If people are out of work and you've got no welfare to speak of, they've got no money to spend. So demand crashes. So a factory can't sell all the washing machines or the cars that it makes. So they lay people off. And they in turn can't. They've got no money to spend on consumer goods. So you get a downward spiral because of the collapse of demand. And that's what prevents the market from correcting itself, as classical economics says that it always does. It doesn't. Isn't their number one fucking wrong idea. The market can go into kind of free fall. So the idea is that with the Green New Deal, to do something parallel to that. It's is to create jobs, programs, to convert the economy from a carbon-based economy to a carbon-zero economy. So, in other words, you know, working on electric cars, alternative energy, solar power, wind power, etc. And to create jobs by instituting that programme with a goal of, say, getting the country carbon neutral by, I don't know, 2030 would be the best. You know, that might, if we can get the world in on it. China's committed to something like this. For all of, we have to say rude things about China in many ways, They're now here to run a command economy, and they're expecting to be friendly to Niger by 2050. So, of course, Trump is totally against this. He's a climate denier, as is his pal Nigel Farage with his Brexit party, which, you know, is getting 23% in the polls, and which got loads and loads of Euro MPs, ironically, in the Euro elections, even though I expect that was a protest vote. But he's a climate denier as well. And you get this combination of climate denial and business as usual is okay. Let's just ramp up the fucking, the rampant robber capitalism, kleptocracy. So Corbyn's, that's Labour's bright idea, I think. And not only do I think it's a good idea, I think it's something like that is necessary. And I mean necessary in a big, very serious way. It's like we're talking human survival.
Yeah.
Do we want our species to go extinct?
How will it practically be implemented?
I don't know what the details, but they'll have like a sort of a public investment bank, you know, and they're big on workers' co-ops as well. So it wouldn't be against sort of like enterprise. It wouldn't expect the state to dream up all the details. People could come forward with ideas and get cheap business loans from the state, from the country. But obviously there'll need to be some planning and commitment and acts of parliament, and it'll be done partly, I mean, the government, you know, if we have a Labour government, they'll legislate. They'll legislate that this is the target, you know, and then they'll put money up, and they will organise some programmes themselves, but they'll also make it easy for people with the right idea. They'll encourage that kind of investment. You can do things like if you want to set up a solar power company. You'll get some tax breaks and things like that. There's all kinds of stuff.
Right, yeah.
There's all kinds of stuff that can do, and I don't know the details.
Yeah.
And they'll have to work.
And also, sort of the solar panels on the roof of people's houses.
Well, that, you know, that
dropped up. That was going quite strong, and then it dropped off a lot, didn't it?
It was subsidised. The government subsidised it to encourage it. It's now dropped by over 90% because the Tories cut it.
Yeah. Well done, Tories.
Yeah, they're not committed to the environment. They're committed to business as usual. That's what it says, conservative. They want to conserve business as usual.
Yeah.
What is it they want to conserve? Their privilege, their wealth and their power. They're a party that represents, basically, that 1%. It is their party. It's their party. It always has been. And what is it they want to conserve? Yeah, business as usual.
And what, how do you think the opposition will try and stop this plan going forward?
Well, if Corbyn gets a good parliamentary majority, there'll be resistance from big business. You might get what they call capital flight. We've already got capital flight because of Brexit. It's where a big company says, fuck you, we don't want these socialists meddling with our free enterprise economy. We're going to take our business to Singapore. It's one of the things that they'll do. You can expect resistance from the judiciary and the civil service. There'll be more smear campaigns. There'll be dirty tricks, endless dirty tricks. You know. So, and the press won't cast anything in a good light, because the press is owned by the billionaire class that Corbyn and a Corbynista Labour government will push against. They're just owned by billionaires who control the information, inverted commas, which keeps everybody in the dark. There's no truth out there. There's little truth circulating out there. You have to dig for it.
Yeah. And where would you recommend our listeners to be digging for
truth? I'd say watch out for getting in a bubble. Because it's very easy, with the internet we thought was going to be the saviour. It's going to be the thing that enables to get real information, true information, as opposed to kind of quasi-information put out by the billionaire-owned press. But of course now, and the internet was like that in the early days. It was free. And you had every kind of craziness in there, and you need some discernment. You have to be able to tell a conspiracy theory from something that's got like a good factual basis, in which the values involved in the interpretation are very clear, and all this kind of stuff. You still have to work for it, you know.
Yeah.
But of course now there's a massive struggle to control the internet, and the internet it grew up from this kind of grassroots base to now be controlled by half a dozen of the biggest companies in the world: Amazon, Google, Facebook, Twitter. And the governments are trying to control them, so they can control information as well. So you're getting yourself into a problematic state as well, and you have to look into some funny corners. That will change. That will change. There are geeks beavering away, as you know, to re-establish some of that kind of free flow of information of the early days.
Yeah.
But it's not even that's not unproblematic, because you get such a diversity of material, some of which appears to be compelling but is actually not based in any kind of truth. And in which there is obscurity introduced into the picture, so that we don't know what values are being pushed or which are structuring the interpretations and the hermeneutics. So it's still problematic, but it's utterly problematic at the moment. The capitalists own the internet, but there is a fight for it. There is a fight over it. There is a struggle, and it's a struggle that's at the very, very sharp end in many ways, because they say if you control information, you control everything.
Yeah.
And especially like the labour movements have been fragmented by zero-hours contracts and by anti-union laws. I mean, the beginning of this neoliberal revolution, Mrs. Thatcher, the first thing she did was smash the power of the unions. The unions were very powerful in the UK at the time. And she smashed them, and she passed laws to make it difficult for them to operate. I think in the US now, it's only 6% of people belong to unions.
It's wow.
It's coming back, because the unions, you know, I mean, people withdraw their labour. If we had like a general strike 2 days a week for the next month, or the next year, the people with that kind of focus could re-establish their interests at the centre of the economy. But it don't happen without information. There is something very primordial about information as well. To summarise, then, I'm recommending that people vote for Jeremy Corbyn, that you don't take the vilification seriously, and that you realise that the establishment is shitting itself and will throw anything, even absurd things, at Corbyn and the Corbynist Labour movement, including such nonsense as Corbyn's had a stroke or whatever. You know, it's absolutely obvious to anybody with eyes in their head that this is just a pure piece of vilification to try and stop a Labour government being elected, number one. Number two, we need to understand the nature of the media, the billionaire-owned press, the establishment-run BBC. We need to understand that. We need to understand the significance of information and disinformation. We need also, I would say, to understand that business as usual isn't an option, but most of the political, particularly the conservative, right-wing, pro-capitalist political movements and parties are actually at bottom in favour of business as usual, and that will lend to the catastrophic end of the fucking human species.
Yeah.
And the Corbyn Labour movement is one ray of hope in all that.
Yeah, not joking about that.
And you need to understand crisis. understand that as the... Right at the core of all this is the absolutely gross inequalities of wealth and power that exist on planet Earth, with just a very small handful of people controlling the wealth and therefore calling the shots, because wealth is power. You need to understand that. And and get yourself behind politics that will push back against that. Again, otherwise you're looking at catastrophe. It's socialism or barbarism, I'm afraid. So, and then we, just to further summarise, we gave the example of a Green New Deal. And we want to recommend that people get behind that. Be aware that some of these right-wing capitalist apologists are also now trying to steal the thunder of that, but they're not really committed to it, and they won't do it properly. Because they'll try and preserve capitalism alongside attempting to save the environment, when it's capitalism that's destroyed the environment by throwing off all externalities into the environment, by counting it as a free place to throw waste, and a free repository of resources like air, water, and so forth. And it's by treating nature in that way that they've been able to maximise profits. Otherwise, if you've got to pay for it, it eats into profit margin.
Yeah.
So basically, capitalism is incompatible with any kind of address to the current ecological problem. A Green New Deal, if properly designed and carefully done, is a ray of hope. And that's as far as we've got. And there is more to say. And maybe we'll say some more at another time. So thanks for listening.
Well, we'll speak to you again soon.
Over and out.